Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, after today, I'll be off for about the next week to spend some time with my kids during the President's Week school vacation. So in advance, have a great weekend, everyone, and a great week. And be nice to the substitute hosts, including Jamie Floyd tomorrow, talking about the documentary Inside Job, nominated for an Oscar and other things. And here is today's poll question on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. It's a Fannie and Freddie question. Should the federal government stop guaranteeing mortgage loans, even if it means higher mortgage rates and fewer Americans owning homes? You can choose end the Fannie and Freddie style guarantees. They put taxpayers at risk when more people should simply be renting. Loans belong only in the private sector. Or learn from this crisis, but keep the guarantees as strong as they can be. Widespread home ownership is good for families and good for the economy and worth some risk from crises such as this. Post your answer to itsafreecountry.org, our politics website. And with that, we begin part three of our four-part series this month with Phil Angelides, chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, the bipartisan panel created by Congress to get to the roots of how the financial crisis came to be. And today we'll focus on Fannie and Freddie, one of the big reasons that the commission ultimately divided along party lines. Chairman Angelides is a Democrat and the former California state treasurer, a job I'm sure he's glad he doesn't have today. And this is not just an academic exercise, folks, or a hypothetical poll question. The Obama administration is now proposing to either end or greatly scale back the extent to which the government backs up mortgage loans, and that has serious implications for mortgage costs and home ownership for the future, for that part of the American dream that involves owning your own home. Again, the Financial Crisis Inquiry Report became a New York Times bestseller last week. And Mr. Angelides, thanks again for doing this series with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be with you, and I really appreciate the way you look at public policy issues in depth, and so it's my honor to be with you.
Thank you. Let's begin one step back and just remind us, what does it mean when we say the government guarantees a loan? Because all these people with Fannie and Freddie loans now facing foreclosure, I don't see the government rushing in and saying, never mind, we've got your back on this.
Well, actually, let me step even a step further back. Mm-hmm. You know, Fannie Mae was formed in 1938 in the Depression to help bolster and create a market for home loans where banks and thrifts could sell their loans and so they could make more loans to homeowners. Fannie was a government agency until 1968, and then Lyndon Johnson wanted to get it off the balance sheet because of the federal government, because of the Vietnam War and the growing deficits. So Fannie Mae became a privately held, publicly traded corporation. Freddie Mac was created, and we ended up with what turned out to be a very dangerous model. Profit-making, publicly traded corporations where executives, like the firms at Wall Street, were driven by profits and compensation, backed implicitly and then ultimately explicitly by the U.S. government. Now the U.S. government essentially owns these companies. They have them in conservatorship. And so, yes, now the U.S. taxpayers are on the hook, but that's how we got to where we got.
Right. Now, some Republicans on your commission concluded that Fannie and Freddie drove the crisis, really began the crisis, because government housing policy under Clinton and then Bush was to get more low-income people into their own homes. So they started guaranteeing more subprime mortgages with the higher risks, and that started everyone down this path of thinking these were okay for widespread use. But you and the other Democrats on the commission don't go that far, right?
Well, actually, there's only one of the nine members who took the position you just expressed. There were five Democrats and one independent on the commission who took the view that the Fannie and Freddie contributed to the crisis but were not a primary cause. And the three of the four Republicans said they contributed but were not the primary cause. And let me just take a minute on that.
Mm-hmm.
We did extensive data. We decided to try to go beyond the ideological wars. I mean, it really stuns me. I was in front of a congressional committee yesterday. People have such built-in philosophical, ideological views on this. But we did a couple of things. First of all, we looked at who did what and when. And the objective evidence shows that the move to subprime lending was really driven by Wall Street and private lenders like AmeriQuest, like New Century, and that what happened in the early 2000s is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were losing market share because they weren't doing these subprime and quote-unquote alt-A loans, the low-doc, no-doc loans. And so it's really in 2005, 2006 that they come to a central point, which is either what they call stay the course, which is continue to back up pretty good, solid 10% down payment, 20% down payment loans, or whether they're going to meet the market where it is. And ultimately, because they were a profit-making organization, they decided to try to regain market share, drive up profits, drive up compensation, and they joined the party late. And unfortunately, in the late stages of the crisis, they bought a significant amount of subprime securities. But even then, Brian, they peaked at they never bought more than 28% of the subprime mortgage-backed securities in the market. So they helped inflate the housing boom. They added helium to the balloon, mm-hmm. but they were not the primary drivers.
But in your opinion, did Democrats in Congress willfully ignore Fannie and Freddie's expanding risk levels because they politically cared too much about home ownership for low-income people of color and others who the policy was intended to serve?
Well, actually, the policy was intended to serve a broad band of Americans. I think that across both party lines, Fannie and Freddie didn't have the kind of regulatory control they should have had. I mean, Fannie and Freddie spent $164 million on lobbying from 1999 to 2008. They had about the weakest regulator around. In fact, Armando Falcone, who is a former regulator at the Office for Federal Housing Enterprise Oversight, said that, quote, Fannie and Freddie's political machine resisted any meaningful regulation using highly improper tactics. And remember, from 2000 to 2006, Congress was controlled by the Republicans, as was the presidency. This was a bipartisan problem. The one thing I think is also important to point out, and let me just say this, Fannie and Freddie took many of the same risks as the Wall Street firms. They were over-levered, meaning they only had $1 of capital for every $75 of mortgages they were backing or purchasing, which means it took very little to bring them down. Mm-hmm. So they had a lot of the same corporate governance problems that Merrill Lynch had, that Morgan Stanley had, that Citigroup had. They took too much risk, were too reckless, and their regulator was weak and did not clamp down on them.
And since the crisis hit, doesn't the government actually guarantee even a higher percentage of loans than before?
Well, in fact, the government's really the only entity left backing mortgages at this point, because so much of the private mortgage market just dried up and went away. You know, one of the things we did also do is we actually took a look at how loans performed. And I do want to get to this mythology. Look, there's no mm-hmm. question that Fannie and Freddie were disasters. They are going to cost the taxpayers. To date, they've cost $150 billion. So no one should argue that this was a well-run set of institutions. In fact, one regulator said they were the worst-run financial institution they've ever seen. But we took a look at 25 million loans that were backed by FHA, loans that were backed by Fannie and Freddie, and loans that were created by Wall Street and the private sector. Mm-hmm. And even when you compare apples to apples, let's take borrowers with credit scores, FICO scores of 660 or below, some of whom might be considered subprime. By the end of 2008, the default rate of loans backed by Fannie and Freddie was about 6%. The default rate of loans created by Wall Street and firms like New Century and AmeriQuest, in which Fannie was not involved, the default rate was 28%. So the worst of the worst were not created by Fannie, but they mattered because they were huge. They were 50% of the market.
The chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, Phil Angelides, coming on with us every Thursday this month, talking today about Fannie and Freddie. So going forward, the White House has laid out three options for dissolving Fannie and Freddie and reducing government's role in guaranteeing home mortgage loans. The most extreme would be to declare the government should have no future role and mortgage loans belong in the private sector. And for people to decide whether they think that's a good idea, what's your take on what that would actually mean in terms of the effects on interest rates and, you know, which Americans could not afford homes in the future?
Well, so first of all, you know, I've been so focused on our investigation, I've just had a chance to read the white paper over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to remind everyone that from 1938 to about 2000 or so, this model of having some form of government support for mortgage lending worked pretty darn well in this country. And in fact, the federal agencies that weren't privatized, that didn't have the profit motive, that weren't driving for huge compensation, Ginnie Mae and FHA fared relatively well, even though they've now been hit because the housing market itself has been hit so badly. I would say two things. I do think there's a legitimate role for some form of government guarantee to help people at the margins. I mean, there's just some folks who don't have the income and capacity to own homes and won't be able to, so we shouldn't be stretching in ways that are imprudent. But to provide some stability, some support for the housing market, particularly when private mortgage lending dries up. So one of the options is what is kind of a middling approach with the ability to scale up when the private market is having real problems. I think there's legitimacy to that approach. In many respects, that was the model created in the New Deal that worked pretty darn well in this country for, you know, six decades. Now, I also think, though, that we kind of there's an imbalance in treatment here. There's a lot of people who, by virtue of income or the community they live in, like New York City or San Francisco, mm-hmm. can't afford home ownership. And I think we've really shortchanged renters in this country. You know, in California, I remember I started my career as an affordable rental housing advocate. And
I didn't know that.
And I had a long history in that. But, you know, in California, while we gave homeowners a mortgage interest deduction, we used to give them a tax credit to renters, and we took that away. There's not been real equity in the treatment of homeowners and renters.
Did you see this in the Wall Street Journal yesterday or maybe elsewhere? Taxpayers wanting the whole story of how Countrywide Financial used its VIP loan program to grease politicians and reward its partners at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac may soon have it, says the Journal. Thanks for this belated act of political hygiene. Go to House Oversight Committee Chairman Daryl Issa, who Wednesday issued a subpoena to Bank of America, which bought Countrywide during the financial crisis. By March 7th, the bank will need to produce all documents related to the company's VIP program, also known as the Friends of Angelo program, in honor of former Countrywide CEO Angelo Mozzillo. What do you think about that?
Well, I did see that. I mean, more information is better. I don't know specific implications of the extent of the program, but I would say this. One of the things that came through in our investigation is that companies like Countrywide started to go to Fannie and Freddie in the mid-2000s and said, look, if you're not going to buy the stuff we're creating, by the way, loans that even Mr. Mozzillo said were toxic, loans that when he was talking about option arms, you know, those are the loans where you can actually pay less than the principal, so the principal grows. He said these loans had the potential for financial and reputational catastrophe for his company, but they kept making them. What happened is a lot of the companies like Countrywide went to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and said, if you don't start buying this stuff, we're just going to sell it to Merrill Lynch and Citigroup. And so there's no question that Countrywide put pressure, built relationships with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac to get them to buy their stuff.
Fascinating. Did you see the movie Inside Job? We're going to be profiling it tomorrow as part of our Best Oscar documentary nominee series. What did you think? Did they get to anything that you didn't get to?
Well, I don't know. know that they got to anything we didn't get to, but I think obviously always in a movie form, you know, color, vivid, people talking. In many respects, they covered a lot of the same ground, obviously not in the same detail or depth that we did, but I thought it was a fine movie. It's interesting to see it nominated for an Oscar. You know, there's still just such a tremendous hunger in this country. You mentioned that we had made the New York Times bestseller list.
Right.
This week we climbed to number 4 on the Washington Post nonfiction paperback. Yes, I think we've written a report here for the American people. We deliberately decided not to write it in Wall Street jargon or for PhDs only. But I think the success of the movie, the success of this report to date, shows that people want to know one basic thing. How is it that Wall Street and Washington seem to be going along their way almost unaffected, while 27 million Americans are out of work, can't find full-time work, while 4 million folks have lost their homes, that may climb to 13 million. People are angry, they're confused. But by the way, I want to say one thing that just showed how out of whack Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac became. You know, they were, I want to remind people, the worst kind of model of privatizing gains and socializing losses, publicly traded corporations. And one of the great moments in our hearings were we asked both Daniel Mudd, who is the CEO, and Robert Levin, who is the chief business officer, how you would have structured these entities so they wouldn't have had the kind of problems they had. Mr. Mudd, I think, gave a long and thoughtful answer. When Mr. Levin was asked this question, he said that decisions such as that, quote, wasn't done at my pay grade. I want you to keep in mind that Mr. Levin made $45 million between 2000 and 2008.
Wow. I'd like to be at his pay grade, and I'll make any decision they want me to. just give me one more thought on if we go to the model that you were outlining where the government doesn't guarantee routine home loans, but only would step in if the market was in some kind of crisis.
No, I want to clarify. I think there is a role for guaranteeing higher quality. What Fannie and Freddie did for decades was conforming loans, 20% down, fixed rate, 30-year mortgages, where you had reasonable income to pay, where there was full documentation. I think keeping that market stable makes sense. And not in a profit-making organization. It worked pretty darn well when it was a public entity.
Explicitly public entity.
Yeah. I mean, so, or a highly regulated private entity. We had the worst of models. These guys were incented to make money, not to essentially protect the mortgage market.
We will come back to that question at a future time, as that is squarely on the table now in Washington. But listeners, we've got that poll question on our politics website. It'sAFreeCountry.org. Should the federal government stop guaranteeing mortgage loans, even if it means higher mortgage rates and fewer Americans owning homes, to avoid the potential for the kind of crisis we've just been through? Register your response and join the conversation, if you like, at itsafreecountry.org. And Phil Angelides, chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, thanks again. And we'll do the one final installment in this series next Thursday at this same time, when I'll be just back from vacation. Talk to you then.
You have a wonderful vacation. Great talking to you.
Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer, WNYC. And coming up next, we will continue our Best Documentary Oscar nominee series with the producer of Exit Through the Gift Shop from the artist Banksy. Stay with us.